Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
I like your fish shot, I keep it with your letter. Gone up in blueprint.
Welcome back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me. It's always a pleasure. And somebody who it's like a dream come true for her to be here is our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. She's here right now. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Jim, if you say so, good morning.
Hi, Joan.
Hi, Tim.
Joan, you're not gonna burst my bubble, are you?
Never. I would never do that.
I know what a thrill it is for you, Joan, yeah. to be here with me.
Week in and week out.
Yeah. I can see that. And I'm always glad to help you out. I'm always glad to do what I can for you, Joan.
Well, thank you. I'll remember that.
So how are things getting crazy in the nation's capital for the holidays?
Well, in what way? You mean in terms of...
Have you been shopping?
Well, a little bit. It's, you know, your usual craziness.
You know, one of the things I like about you, Joan, is you're probably as close to being a Scrooge as any lady that I know.
Oh, really?
Don't you
wow,
think so?
You must not know a lot of women.
I mean, you don't get all worked up over the holidays like a lot of women do, do you?
I don't? How do you know that?
Well, because I've known you for about 100 years.
Oh, okay.
Do you?
I thought I did, but maybe I don't.
Okay. All right. Well, you just don't act like that as much. And,
well, and how would I act if I was?
Well, you would have known about how the crowds were for the holiday shopping.
Yeah, but a lot of my shopping I do online.
Ah.
It's easier.
And so it's not too crowded there, is it?
Not too crowded.
Joan, let's get into the letter and talk about what's going on in Washington in 2005. And you guys say that it's going to be Christmas all year for business.
Well, pretty much, you know, because remember we have the White House is Republican, the House is Republican-led, and
God is
Senate
is
Republican-led.
God is in his heaven and all is right with the world, right?
Right, exactly. If you say so. But in any case, so that should kind of help the business agenda as much as possible. So we're saying that business is going to get a lot of what it wants from the government next year.
Well, let's talk about some of those because you guys actually identify some of them. And one of them that is huge, huge, huge for small business is the first one on your list. Tell us what it is.
That's right. It's called tort reform. And this has to do with big class action lawsuits, which can be very crippling to businesses in terms of the awards that are made to plaintiffs. And this has been a kind of a thorn in businesses' side for a very long time. And this is one of those things that I kind of almost thought would never pass. But I think they're getting closer to having enough votes to pass these provisions such as caps on punitive damages and doing something about this whole asbestos mess and sort of reining in these claims and setting up a fund to deal with them.
Well, the trial lawyers have poisoned their own well, in my opinion, Joan, because, and I'll tell you, I know some people who are not as, you know, as ardent on the side of business as I am, ardently on the side of business, who agree with me about this. They poison their own well by abusing things. I mean, they've become a lot of the trial lawyers have become predators, not just advocates for the people who've been harmed. They've
Sure.
become predators, and they've done it. So they've done it to themselves. And when I have talked to small business owners in by themselves or in groups, and I ask them what are the things that they fear coming around the corner at them, invariably, if not the first, the second thing that they say is a lawsuit.
Oh, see.
And they're not talking about lawsuits where they've done something wrong or something that was obviously you have to have a lawsuit to settle it. They're talking about a frivolous lawsuit.
Sure. That's the problem.
Yeah. And so I really do hope that we get tort reform. It'll be good for everybody. Frivolous lawsuits cost small business owners millions and millions and millions of dollars every year. And also, One of the things that I'm not sure if you said this, Joan, talking about the taking the class actions to federal court instead of state court. Did you say that?
Oh, no, I did not. That's huge.
That's huge. And the reason is because one of the things that one of the little terms that that's been coined over the last 20 years or so, Joan, is something called jury shopping.
Oh, that's big.
You know about that, right?
Well, that's where, you know, you want to find a friendly court, in other words.
Right.
To hear your case.
And some states are known to have those friendly courts that then they literally can go to a state, find a plaintiff, and then take that case to a county where that county is predisposed to the plaintiffs. And they call it jackpot justice. Joan,
yeah.
You've heard that term before, haven't you?
That's a great term, yeah.
We got to stop. We got to end jackpot justice. Yeah. It ought to just be justice, Joan.
You would think.
And so I hope that we get this tort reform. That is definitely good news for the marketplace, I think. Joan, what about the energy legislation? Are we finally going to get an energy bill?
Well, you know, Congress came close last year, but then the compromise fell apart toward the end. Now we're saying that there will be new tax incentives for things like increasing the capacity of refineries and engaging in more oil and gas exploration. I think the real interesting issue here is going to be what is known as ANWR, which is the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
I'm trying to do the you know the Joan the when you they talk about ANWR on CNN or some of the cable or some of the network news stations, they always show a picture of little reindeer loping along on the tundra, you know, when they're talking about it. So I was trying to give that, that kind of a background for you there.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I was trying to evoke little bunnies and things like that in the background. I'm trying to do my part here, Joan.
But, well, I don't want the reindeer and the bunnies to get hurt.
You know what I think we should do, Joan? I think we should ask the Alaskans what they think that drilling will do to their country. I really believe that if Alaskans say, look, we're okay with it, I think we ought to do it. If they say no, I think we shouldn't do it.
Well, are we going to ask the Alaskan bunnies and reindeer, too?
No, we have to count on the Alaskans to be in charge. I don't think Alaskans will. I mean, they're interested in their own environment. I think they'll be honest about it. I think we should ask them if they say it's okay. I think we ought to go drill there.
Wow.
What do you think about that?
I'm worried about the reindeer and the bunnies, and I know I sound like I'm kidding, but I'm really not.
Well, and actually, I said reindeer, but there are no reindeer in Alaska. There are caribou, though.
Well, there you go. I'm worried about them, too.
I don't think, and there may be a couple of bunnies up there. I'm not sure. One of them, I think, is named Thumper. 20 after, we'll be right back with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. Stay with us. Back is 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kipling Editors. Joan, we were talking about the energy legislation, but before we leave that, I want to go back up a little bit to the tort reform issue. One of the things that I think we didn't bring up is that the tort reform law could, and that this would be one of the major pieces of the legislation, I think, is you guys point this out, is a cap on punitive damages in medical malpractice cases.
Yes. I mentioned cap on punitive damages, but I didn't specifically say med-mal, as it's known in Washington. You know, we have shortened terms for everything. We can't say medical malpractice. We have to say med-mal.
Yeah. Well, you say those terms so much, it helps out, I'm sure, and it keeps the hot air out of the environment.
Yeah, right.
But the thing is that folks, you know, if you're a victim of a medical malpractice, you should have a right to redress. But Joan, this has got to be one of the elements in reining in the high cost of medical coverage and medical insurance.
Sure, and as we all know, health insurance coverage shows no signs of slowing.
Right. It's going up every year. It's only in the last year or so has the increase abated a little bit, but yeah. Not too much. Joan, I want to come back to this energy thing, though, for a second and point out that if we don't do something, you know, we're more dependent. You guys, Kiplinger has pointed this out within the last year or so, Joan. We are now more dependent upon foreign oil than ever before. We're not going, you know, we'd like to think that how long has it been now, Joan? 25 or plus years since we had the oil embargo?
That's right.
Over 25
and then
years.
That's awfully scary, I think.
It is. And we're much more dependent, not just a little more. We're a lot more dependent upon other people, their oil. And Joan, did you know that you know, this is the week that the anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. I saw something recently that 80% of Japan's oil during that time, 60 years ago, came from the U.S.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we were a major exporter of oil to the rest of the world 60 years ago, and Japan got 80% of their oil from us. So when we put the screws on them because of their joining, you know, the Axis, the Axis powers, and we basically, you know, cut off their oil. That's one of the reasons they went to war with us.
Sure, makes sense.
So you can see why that we did it. But I mean, think about that. In 60 years, we've gone from being a donor to a debtor in terms of oil.
And we really don't have a good sense of really how much oil is left in the earth.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of controversy over that, whether we've peaked and we're on the downhill side or what. And just the consumption is going up and up. And one of the scariest things to me is that countries that never used to consume a lot of oil now are. And the best example of that is China.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Joan, what we do know is that there is oil, more oil in the ground, but it's not 10,000 feet, it's 30,000 feet.
Right.
And that costs more to drill for.
Yep.
And that's one of the reasons why we have the high. One of the
harder
reasons
to get to.
Why we have the higher prices. So, folks, you know, Joan, you know, I'm no tree hugger, but we got to come up with other ways to get ourselves around.
Well, I'm impressed that you would say.
I'm waiting on, but I still think that we can do this without hurting the bunnies and Bambi and Thumper. I think we can do it.
We
without,
have to do it without hurting the bunnies.
Well, I think we can do that. I think we can do it in Anwar.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Joan, I'm waiting for the Star Trek transporter. That's what I want.
You mean to beam you place?
Beam me to Grandma, Scotty. Over the hills and dales, beam me right over to Grandma. That's what I want.
Okay.
Okay, let's talk about transportation. What's up with that? There's some new laws on transportation?
Yes, that's right.
For highways and roads and bridges?
Yeah, and boy, look at this price tag. We say $300 billion is going to be approved for projects. And this, we're talking about repairing roads and bridges, the highways.
How are we going to keep those Republicans in office if we don't?
More pork.
That's right.
Great.
That's right. I need my own bridge, don't you?
Right.
Don't you need your own bridge?
Sure.
What about, you know, Joan, the very first issue that I covered on this show, 7 years ago, right now, as we speak, probably, I actually can go back and remember the day, was the bankruptcy bill.
Oh, please.
7 years later, folks, Bill McCollum of Orlando's district in Florida was on this show the first December I was on the air in 97, and we talked about bankruptcy. He was pushing it. He was a major proponent of it and sponsor of the bill.
He's no longer even in Congress.
He's not even in Congress anymore.
Yeah.
In fact, I think he's in a nursing home somewhere. He's so old now. But it's been so long. I'm just teasing. But seriously, but you guys have it on your list like it's going to happen.
Well, I didn't put it there, believe me. And the funny thing about this is I used to cover banking. And, you know, year after year, the lobbyists at the beginning of the year would tell me, this is going to be the year. And when President Bush was first elected, people said, this is going to be the year, finally, because we have a Republican president. And then for various reasons that we don't have time to go into here, it still didn't happen. So now, of course, President Bush has been reelected. So once again, we're saying, this is going to be the year. So I wouldn't bet the farm on this yet, but let's wait and see. There's certainly a very good chance.
I'm not sure that the reason that the bankruptcy bill hasn't passed was a partisan issue. I don't think it was as much of a partisan issue. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Stand by, quick break. Right back with Joan Pride. It's 29 After. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We are back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks for hanging around with me today. It's good to be with you. It's always a pleasure. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. My website is www.jbsba.com, and it's... that's the short one, or jimblassingame.com. That's my favorite one. Or, if you like to type, here's a long one, smallbusinessadvocate.com. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Joan Pride is our guest. They got a pretty darn good website themselves over there at Kiplinger. Kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R is their website. And it's a good one, too. I encourage you to check it out. Lots of good stuff there you can do for free. But, Joan, they can also lay their money down and subscribe, can't they?
And we wish they would, sure.
We wish they would.
We love that.
We like subscribers, don't we?
Yeah.
And that's what you would want to subscribe to. And I know you're asking that question, is the Kiplinger letter, which is the flagship. It comes every week on Friday. If you get it by email on Monday, if you get it by regular mail, I get it both ways. I can't get enough. And you can, that's the weekly letter, over 80 years in publication, over 81 years, actually, I should say. And then they got the three... biweekly letters, the California, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. And then there's a magazine, too, somewhere around over there, isn't there, John?
Oh, I would say so. It's right in the building here, Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And we all know about that one. It's a good one. And all that's at Kiplinger. 30-day free trial. I worked hard to get that, so take advantage of it. Or, Joan, give us a website. I mean the phone number, please.
Sure. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
All right. Joan, and folks, seriously, I don't know of any publication that's more small business friendly than the Kiplinger publications, and I really like the things that they say and the way that they put them. It speaks to me as a small business owner. So let's move down and talk a little bit about some of these other laws that you guys say will probably pass. Mr. Bush is probably going to – I know he's going to be pushing for his first term tax cuts to become permanent, isn't he?
Yeah, that's huge. In fact, the Kiplinger tax editor has been watching that pretty carefully. That's probably his number one priority in the tax area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's quite a lot. You know, the people are probably remembering what was passed in terms of lower tax rates for individuals and the higher child credit and things like that. But don't forget, also expiring in a few years are the lower rates for capital gains, lower
right.
rate for dividends,
right.
and the big one, the big enchilada, the estate tax repeal. You know, the estate tax is going down and down and down, and it goes away, I believe, is it 2009 or 2010?
I always forget one of those two.
And the next year comes
I got to figure that out so I know, you know, when to save
when to die, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
The next year comes back with a vengeance. It doesn't come back at the 2008 level. It comes back at the old, much higher level.
As if the law had never been passed to start with.
So, you know, euthanasia is a pretty good option at that point. No, I'm only kidding. I don't really mean that. But it's very important that Congress do something so that you don't have the estate tax coming back full force.
That's right. And so I think they're going to get that done. I hope they do.
Right. And the interesting thing about that is we think from studying the whip counts, you know, the number of votes that are in the Senate, that the proponents of estate tax repeal permanency are tantalizingly close.
Wow.
To the 60 votes they would need to kill off any filibuster that might come up.
Wow.
We're not saying they're there, but we're saying they're real close.
That's huge.
Oh, yeah.
That is huge. And so there'll be a big push. I hate to mention it, Joan, but we got another election coming up in 2 years. I know that's kind of rude for me to mention that.
Give me a break before we start.
But they're already getting ready for that one so they can get those 60 votes for sure. Trade is a big issue. There's the CAFTA thing coming up, which is a Central American Free Trade Agreement.
That's right. And, you know, we always talk about NAFTA,
yeah.
which was the famous North American Free Trade Agreement.
We just celebrated the 11th anniversary of that one.
Some
people aren't celebrating, but that's...
And, of course, this trade agreement, like NAFTA, would give the president fast-track... this agreement does not do that, but another thing they need to do is to give the president fast-track power to negotiate deals on trade with other countries.
Well, actually, of course, he actually has it. They need to renew it. That's one thing.
Right.
But that's a big deal because there are 130-something trade agreements around the globe, and we're a party to, I think, three now.
Yeah.
So we got to get on with it, folks, because don't forget, when goods cross borders, armies don't. Joan, what about minimum wage?
Here we go. Wait, let me take a minute here. Do you need some help getting up on
that? I'm fine. I'm fine.
You're climbing up by yourself?
I'm okay, yeah.
Okay. Do you want me to start first,
or
would you like to go ahead?
I want you to go.
Okay. Well, you want the good news first or the bad news first?
Both of them. Give us both.
Okay, well, the good news is we don't expect an increase in 2005, but, you know, watch out for 2006.
Well, of course, the bad news is 13 states have already passed their own form of minimum wage, which is above 15. Folks, you can't mandate expenses on businesses. It's nuts. 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. In case you didn't know where I stand on that, I'll remind you when we come back after these messages. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me today. And I'll remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, we've got Jim Camp, who's going to talk to us about negotiating. We've got Leslie Mills, who is going to talk about operating a special needs service business. Yeah, that's going to be pretty cool. And then John Fox is going to talk to us about taxes, and Dave Anderson is going to talk about dealing with negative coworkers. Joan, do you have any negative coworkers?
Oh, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean. Well, I don't have any around here. I get rid of them if they're negative. We don't have any negative Nellies around here. We don't have time for that. But anyway, we're going to get Dave Anderson to help us out with that. Joan, you're going to be proud of me. I'm not going to get on my minimum wage soapbox.
Uh-huh.
But just a little bit.
I knew except was coming.
Folks.
Here we go.
Your business.
I'll be right back.
The government doesn't tell you how much to charge for your products. You wouldn't let them do that. The government doesn't tell you how much to charge for, profits you should make. The government doesn't tell you, how much utilities to you should use or whatever. They shouldn't tell you how much you should pay your employees. It's a competitive marketplace, Joan. It's nuts. It's stupid to have a minimum wage increase. It makes no sense. And so I'm not being mean. People who are on the lower end of the wage scale, I've been there. You earn your increase. The government shouldn't give it to you. It's the 21st century, folks. It's we should get away from all that business. Anyway, that wasn't too long, Joan. I'm through. Are you back?
Oh, excuse me. I was just filing my nails. Oh, sorry.
Sometimes,
can we go,
Joan,
back to our regularly scheduled program now?
You know, this is the holiday season. You're supposed to be nice to people, Joan.
Me?
What about regulations? What are the, Joan, and you probably remember me saying this, small businesses are impacted almost double what big businesses are impacted by.
Well, and many of these
per
areas.
Per employee.
Right.
For regulations, to comply with regulations, it's over $7,000 a year per employee to comply with regulations.
And if you think about it, it's understandable because in very big corporations, you have entire departments just to deal with things like, for example, accounting and taxes.
Right.
But a small business owner, maybe someone who has a company with just a few people,
they have to
worry about taxes. They're trying to grow their business. They're trying to do what they went into business to do. But there's all these other things they have to worry about. If they're big enough, they have to worry about OSHA, and they don't have to be that big to need to worry about that.
Absolutely.
Americans with Disabilities Act, taxes, you name it.
But apparently, you say that businesses may like some of the regulation things that are going to be happening.
May favor
us a little bit.
There's some easings coming up, which is good. For example, we think even though there's a court order out there that would limit exposure to hexavalent chromium, which is important for metalworking and cement companies, we think OSHA is going to go slow in implementing it.
Right.
So there's sort of another side of the coin there. Even though you have a lot of regulations out there, you've got a regulatory structure in place in the Bush administration that is trying to stay business-friendly on a lot of these issues.
You also point out that there shouldn't be any new extra issues for small businesses and anything new to come up with the Americans for Disabilities Act.
Right, which, you know, and there's been seemingly one thing after another over the last several years, so it would be nice to actually get a break here.
That the Americans for Disability Act, folks, also known as the lawyer retirement. and Joan, let's move on down and talk about this electronic mail issue. What's going on with that? This is something that's kind of interesting. Tell us about that.
Well, and again, Kiplinger can turn a phrase like nobody else can. We talk about companies that run risks when they delete email willy-nilly.
Yeah, I like that term. That's a good one.
Yeah, thank you. It's sort of like the worry about destroying evidence, destroying paper documents, you know, putting stuff in the paper shredder when, you know, maybe it's going to be needed by an investigation or a court or something like that.
Well, now, Joan, I can see throwing away something that you knew was going to be held, needed for a case or something, but I delete stuff all the time.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know what to tell people to do about this.
Well, what we're saying is have a policy. In other words, if you have a policy set up in terms of what should be deleted and what should not, it would be harder for, you know, a trial lawyer or a court to come back at you and try to accuse you of deleting after the fact because you were
right,
trying to hide something if the policy was already in place.
Well, you know, I actually, me being a pack rat, Joan, I actually keep my email. I don't delete. I mean, I delete all the junk, but email that come in for business, I actually have folders for them.
Well, I love email because you can prove, you know, they can't say, oh, I lost your letter.
That's right.
No, lost that order. I can say, no, I've got an email proving when it was sent.
Yeah, and that you replied that you received it.
Right, exactly.
So absolutely, yeah, no question about that. That's a good idea. The new federal guidelines on ethics. Joan, talk to us about that. This is a very interesting thing. You guys say it's going to apply to all businesses.
Yes, which, and we're saying large or small, public or private, and even to not-for-profit companies as well.
What are the guidelines of, what are the government, the federal guidelines on ethics? What are those? Is
well,
it like Sarbanes-Oxley or what?
Well, it's not really clear here what they're talking about, in fact.
Because you know, I actually didn't know there were federal guidelines on ethics.
Well, I think the key word here also is guidelines.
Yeah.
Although we say failure to comply could mean big penalties, so I'm not sure how that's a guideline and not a rule.
I'd like to find out what those are. Joan, would you help me remember to get in touch with the person who did the research on this? Because I want to know more about that. Because if there are federal guidelines on ethics, folks, that we're supposed to be keeping up with, we need to know what they are. Joan, I want to help me remember to follow up on that. Quick break. It's 10 till. We'll be right back. When we come back, we're going to talk about what are the Japanese up to? They're up to used cars. Stay with us.
To my love, took it down. I climbed a mountain and I turned around. And I saw my reflection in snow covered hills.
We're back at 7-2.
Little
Stevie Nicks for you there. Joan Pride is with us. She's almost as good a singer as Stevie Nicks, aren't you, Joan?
Sure, whatever you say. I'm very agreeable today.
I noticed that.
Yeah.
Well, not completely agreeable, though. We still need to work on that a little bit, Joan.
It's all relative, Jim.
Joan, 30 years ago or so, Americans got all excited because the Japanese invaded us.
That's right.
And they invaded us with cars. They invaded us with cheap things that actually, you know, were actually good quality stuff. They almost ran Xerox out of business with their copiers, and now they've made a resurgence they're making a resurgence in another area that's a little bit surprising. Tell us about it.
Okay, well, this is kind of interesting that they're trying to get into the used car market.
Yeah.
and I guess flood the market with, well, we're saying pre-owned cars. I love that term, pre-owned cars. I mean, we're talking about used cars.
They're new to you, folks.
And we say that 40 million used cars are sold here annually. That's a huge amount.
My brother's in the used car business.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're actually going to buy, it looks like they're going to be buying maybe higher quality cars, used cars, and they're going to sell them at auction.
Online auction.
Online auction.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's going to be very interesting. And this is a big market. You know, and you guys point out that it's going to impact the car dealers.
Not a whole lot, but some.
Well, the internet is impacting car dealers.
Already, yeah.
Yeah. But the one thing to point out is there are two kinds of used cars being sold out there. The ones that are sort of the older cars that are salvaged pretty much. The dealers get rid of those real quick. They never let those on their lot.
Right.
But then the higher quality cars, they keep on their lots. And so that's probably where, I'm sure that's where the Japanese are going to go. And if they create another aftermarket for these things, not only to sell, but to buy those things, that's going to be an interesting ripple to go through the marketplace, Joan.
Oh, no question.
And you guys say that it's going to hit the West Coast early next year and that they'll be nationwide by 2008. Now, here's my question, Joan.
Mm-hmm.
How do you have an internet auction without it being nationwide immediately?
I don't understand.
Worldwide, for that matter.
Maybe what we're talking about is they're saying they're setting up offices on the West Coast and then have a nationwide network by 2008. I guess, you know, you can auction all you want online, but you still have to get the car to the person.
That's a good point. So to start with, if you buy a car, you're probably going to have to get it in from. But you know what? People do that all the time, Joan, on eBay.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people who buy cars on eBay.
That's right.
And I guess I'm sure there's some of the other online auctions like Yahoo probably has cars too,
sure.
but it's an incredible way to sell a car. It's an interesting way. You kind of got to pay attention to what's going on. I almost bought a car one time online, and turns out that I was a little concerned about it. I did a little checking, and I found out that the car wasn't as represented.
Ooh!
So I didn't buy it. But you know what? That could happen to you anywhere.
Oh, that's with any kind of product online.
Right,
sure.
Exactly. So the Japanese are sneaking up on us again, folks. You might want to check that out if you're in the used car business. Joan, what about the economy? Last month's hiring was off a little bit, wasn't it?
It sure was, but we're saying not to, you know, shouldn't panic about that. We're saying that even though the November number was lower, that was just sort of a pause, and that, you know, companies will be ramping up again.
You know, Joan, in terms of the jobs, in the 90s, a lot of people got hired who shouldn't have been. We were actually overemployed in the 90s. People had jobs when there were no jobs that really there for them to do. The good thing about these 112 jobs is I believe...
112,000.
I'm sorry. Right. Thank you. 112,000 jobs. The good thing about them is that I think those are jobs that are going to be here, because people are really being judicious in the way that they're hiring people nowadays.
Well, that sure is important, and you would hope that people are hiring without the intent to be eliminating the job and sending it overseas, that if they're going to hire at this point here, that job will stay here.
Well, especially, Joan, when you realize that over half of those jobs were, and who knows in any given month what the number is, but statistically, in a year's time, over half of those jobs are created by small businesses.
That's right.
And those guys aren't going to send anything overseas.
Right.
I mean, they may do business overseas, but it's not good. But if they're hiring somebody, it's to support, even if they're doing business overseas, it's to support that effort. So those are good jobs. That's the good thing about that. Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thank you, Jim.
We will see you next time.
Sounds good.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and remember today, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.